holding by the Mishnah on Hey Amud Aleph, near the top. Hey Amud Aleph, near the top. Mishnah says, Ad Mosai Sherlin Sagashomim. Till when do we ask for rain? In previous Mishnah talked about when we start and when we end mentioning rain, meaning Mashav Ruach Moed Hageshem. Now, when do we stop asking for rain? St. Talamotah. Rabbi Huda says until Pesach is over, which we discussed yesterday, the different possibilities, what that means. Maybe it meant until Pesach is actually over. Maybe it meant until sometime Erev Pesach, when the time for bringing the Korban Pesach comes, etc. Rabbi Huda, and Rabbi Meir says until Nissan is over. And how do we know Rabbi Meir says that Nissan is the time where it is still a time of rainfall? Shenema, the pasuk says in Yoel, "Vayored lachem geshem," the Eibush brought down rain for you, Moreh u'Malkosh, the first rain and the last rain, like we say in Shema, Yoreh u'Malkosh. The Gemara will talk about tomorrow why they're called Moreh and Malkosh, respectively. Barishon, in the first month. The Gemara is going to tell the story. I mean, usually the Yoreh or Moreh comes much earlier. Usually it comes Cheshvan time. There was one particular year when it came Nissan. But so we see from that, but since the Pasuk uses the expression Barisha, and that was in the first month, means that any time during the first month, any time during Nissan, is still a suitable time for rain. And so therefore, and therefore, it says as long as, so therefore all that time, even during all of Nissan, is still a suitable time to be saying the same Talamot.
And after that,
not, because after that, it says, as we said, after that, as the Gemara is going to say later in the Masechta, it's a siman klala. It's a curse to have rain during the summer in Eretz Yisrael. It's not a normal thing.
Especially during the time of Spheres Omer.
Right. Well, not so much tied with Spheres Omer specifically, but after Nissan time already, you have the grain is in the fields drying. It's not a time when it's supposed to be a dry season. So, Amar Rav Nachman to Rabbi Yitzchak. So Rav Nachman asked Rabbi Yitzchak. The Gemara says, "What do you mean Yoreh v'Nissan? Yoreh v'Marcheshven? Yoreh is supposed to take the Yoreh, which means the early rain. It's supposed to be in Marcheshven. The Tnan or the Tanya, Yoreh v'Marcheshven or Marcheshven v'Nissan. The Yoreh takes is the early rain. The rainy season in Eretz Yisrael we know is only the fall and the winter. So, and maybe the very beginning of spring. So you usually have the Yoreh, the early rain, happening at Cheshven time. Then it rains off and on throughout the winter. Then you have the last rain, Malkosh, which comes Nissan time, and that's it for the rest of the year. So Moreh is usually in Yoreh is in Cheshvan, and Malkosh is in Nissan. What do you mean? What's the pasuk saying, and what does Rav Meir mean that you can have? It can be the proper time of Moreh in the first month in Nissan. Amalei, so he tells him, Hach Yom Rav Yechanan. This is what Rav Yechanan said. This is a special case. Bimei Yoel ben Pesuel Meskayim Mikrazeh. In the times of Yoel ben Pesuel, Yoel is one of the Treyos, sir. When he lived, there's different opinions because it doesn't say in the pasuk explicitly. Rashi identifies Yoel talks about well, Niskayim Mikrazeh. This pasuk happened. Yoel starts off with a nevuah like this. He describes a terrible locust plague. He says the likes of which there's never been before. The plague of locusts. Yes, sir. Gozam achala arba v'gomer. Whatever was left over by the gozam, one kind of locust, the arba came and ate. Whatever the arba left, another kind. And there were four waves of locusts, one after the other.
They still had locusts.
Of course, but there's something like this, a plague like this, where there were four of them, one after the other, ravaging the land. That never happened. Rashi points out on Chumash, what about we say b'makas arba and Mitzrayim? It says v'achrav lo yakeim, there'll never be another one. What about this plague from Yoel's time? Rashi says the difference is the one from Mitzrayim was all one species. That a swarm like that, where one swarm like that fixed the whole country clean, that has never happened again. But something like in Yoel's time, it was a different kind of thing. It was several different species. Yeah. Anyway. So when did Yoel live? Like I said, there are different opinions. Rashi over here identifies this locust, this swarm of locusts and famine that came from it with a famine that's mentioned in Melachim, Sefer Melachim, that happened in the time of Yehoram, the son of Ahaz, which were in the middle of the time of the second Beit Mikdash, in the middle of the time of the first Beit Mikdash.
In
the time of Elisha, right. On the other hand, Seder Olam says that says differently. Seder Olam says that Yoel was actually in the time of the Menashe, so putting him about 200 years later.
And who says it was during the time of the
Elisha? Rashi brings that over here that the famine. The Gemara is going to describe soon that there was a 7-year famine. That was the 7-year famine which the pasuk describes. In Malachim. Elisha tells the Isha Shunamis, the woman who she and her husband were machis orachem, and then with his bracha they had a baby, etc. The whole story. He told her, you should know there's a famine coming for 7 years. You guys should move someplace else temporarily. Why? Because of the people who were worshipping Abadazara. But, yeah. Anyway, so what happened in Yoel's time? So that year, the whole Adar had passed, and still no rain had fallen in the seventh year of the famine. Then, and the first rain of the year fell on the first day of Nisan. Marsha points out that the year, we learned in Rosh Hashanah, that for certain purposes, the year begins in Nisan. So if there was a Gzeirah, Meshamayim, for 7 years of famine, and Yoel goes on to describe over there the terrible calamity over there and how the people have to gather together and cry and do tshuva and so forth. So evidently they did. And then the Navi says, now the Eved Shah promises as a reward for your tshuva, So the point is then so right away comes the new year, already there's rain. But so Yoel tells the Jewish people, okay, go start planting. The rain is coming. They said to him, how could that be? What if somebody only has a kav of wheat or two kav of barley? Should he eat it and he'll live for the time being? Or he's ran over Yomo, so he's going to plant it and then he's going to die because he's going to have nothing to eat. Like, this is our last food. The Navi tells him, nevertheless, I hear what you're saying, but still, have the tachan and the Eidishtir. Go plant. And when they did that, a nes happened for them. And they discovered the grain that was hidden in the walls, like the mice dragged away over all the years and hidden in the holes in the walls. And in the anthills, same idea, that ants over the years had taken grain, now they found it. So Mepharshim and Yaakov say that actually that's the sequence of events. First, they had to show that they have bitachon. They're taking the last little bit of grain and planting it, trusting in the Navi that it's going to grow, and then the Eved Shah helps them find these hidden caches so they'd have what to eat meanwhile.
Can you eat food that was taken by animals, by mice, by...
Yeah, I mean, there's no issue with it as far as kashrus, if that's what you're asking. No, I mean, the Gemara does mention in Horius that if you eat something that was bitten into by a mouse, it's kashal shiksa. It's bad for it. It makes you forgetful. But okay, you know, first of all, under the circumstances, second of all, we're not necessarily talking that the mice chewed on the grain or whatever, it's that they schlepped it around, you know. Anyway, Yotze Vizaru, so sure enough, they went and planted Sheni or Shlishi Ravid on the second, third, and fourth of Nisan. The Yardalam Ravia Shnia Bachamisha Benisan. And in the second rain, which usually the sequence of events is usually you have the first rain of the year around Yud Zayin Cheshvin, we'll have later in the Masechta. Then you usually have the second rain of the season about a week later. And from then on, it rains off and on throughout the winter. So here you have the second rain came 4 days after the first one, on the fifth of Nisan. And the grain started growing. And they were able to bring barley for the Korban Omer, which the barley for the Korban Omer dafka has to be from Eretz Yisrael. They were able to bring it in its time, on the 16th of Nisan. Nimse, so it comes out, grain that normally takes 6 months to grow, you usually plant grain early in the winter, cheshvan time, and then it's ready Nisan time. Instead, it grew in 11 days, it was a nes. Nimsa Oimer Akarav Mitzvur Shal Shish Chadashim. So it comes out the Oimer, which usually is brought from Tzvur that takes 6 months to grow, Karav Mitzvur Shal Achados Yoim, it was brought from grain that took only 11 days to grow. Because what we're saying is, Tosfos discusses the exact sequence in Marsha also, but the gist of it is, the grain, even though they had planted on the second, the third, and the fourth, it didn't really start growing properly until the second rain. It needed the rain to start growing. It started actually growing on the fifth of Nisan. From the 5th to the 16th, it was only 11 days. Val Osa Derhu Omer. That's the thing. That during those 11 days, they ate the grain that they found in the anthills and whatnot. Val Osa Derhu Omer. It's about that generation that experience that kind of nest that the pasuk says Hazorim Bedima. Those who plant with tears, like they're with tears. What are we going to eat now? Birina Yitzaru. They'll harvest with joy. And the pasuk continues, Holach Yelechu Vachay, the person who walks and then goes on walking and crying, Noisim Meshach Hazara, the one who's carrying the bag of seed. And what does it say? Bo Yavu Berina, Nois Alamotzav, he'll come happily carrying his sheaves of grain. So, my Holach Yelechu Vachay, Noisim Meshach Hagomer, what is that second pasuk adding? You already said Hazara Medima Birina Yitzaru. What are you adding with Holach Yelechu Vachay? Who else is crying? Amar Rabbi Yehuda, this is the first pasuk is talking about the people. The second one is talking about the animals. shirks and kurdish, when the ox is going and plowing, it's crying because it also has nothing to eat. The pasuk describes there in Yoel, not just that it has to work, but I mean the pasuk describes over there, it's not just the people were having a hard time of it in the famine, the animals were too. So the ox as it's going is also crying. And on the way back already it's happy. It's already able to eat the sprouting greens that are coming up from the furrow. In other words, no sooner are they planting the seeds than it's already starting to grow. It's already starting to grow offshoots, green offshoots, and the oxen can nibble on those. That's what it means. He'll come happily. Even the animals already are happy that they right away have what to eat. My noisy alamoisov. Okay, what do the last words of the pasuk mean? That he carries his sheaves. Again, what is that adding exactly? Berino yotzeru. Of course, that they're happy that they harvested. What else is being gained by is being added by the pasuk? They're actually carrying the sheaves. Normally store grain. Amar Rav Chisda. So Rav Chisda says, "Amri lav masnis tana." Or others say we learn in a brisa. Usually a stalk of grain, you usually have the stalk is much longer than the actual part of it that has the grain. The part that has the kernels is a few inches long, and then you have a huge stalk underneath it. Here is the other way around. Kana zeres shibolas zurasayim. The stalk was a zeres, which is a half or a third of an amma. It's two or three tfachim. And the shibolus, the part with the seed, was rasayim, was twice as long. So therefore, in that sense, it was alumoisa, but it was like unusually heavy. Unusually heavy sheaves of grain. But they're happy carrying it because now they have much, much more than they did before.
Very happy with them.
Yeah, because they did tshuva. Some of those psukim in Yoel describing the tshuva convocation, the gathering that they had to do tshuva, in Minhag Ashkenaz they read it as part of the Haftarah Shabbos tshuva, because it's appropriate to the time. We don't. We only read the part from Hosea, Shuvah Yisrael, and the three psukim from Micha. But then, if you look in the Chumashim, they have Minhag Ashkenaz to also read these psukim from Yoel. My dichtiv, what does it mean when it says in the pasuk, "Kara Hashem l'ra'av"? Hashem has called to the famine, the gambar la'aretz shavashanim, and it's also going to be coming to the land for 7 years. Which again, Rashi said before that this 7-year famine, which is talking about, which Elisha is warning the Isha Ashunamis, there's a famine coming, leave the country for the time being, so you don't have to suffer from it. This is the same one as happened as part of it intersected with Yoel's plague of locusts. And with some of those 7 years, some of it was locusts and some of it was just a regular drought. So the question is, Anach Sheva Shanim, my uncle, what are they eating during those 7 years? Which Mepharshim asks part of the question is the unusual expression in the pasuk. Usually it's Kikara Hashem Lodav Sheva Shanim. Why the double expression? Hashem has called the hunger, and also it's coming to the land for 7 years. What's the also? Right? In other words, there must be two things. Number one, there was a famine for 7 years, and number two, evidently the idea is that it got progressively worse and worse. What exactly happened? Amalei, he tells him, Hachi Amar Bechen, and Rabbi Yechanan said as follows: Shana Rishana Achlo Mashem Batim. The first year they ate for the food they had stored up in their houses. Shnia Achlo Mashem Basadeh. The second year they ate what was in the field. Shlishis Sabahem Tahara. The third year they didn't have any grain left, so they had to eat the meat of kosher animals. They had to shech their cows and whatnot. Revius Sabahem Tmeh. The fourth year they're already reduced to eating the meat of trefa animals, their mules and donkeys and whatnot. Chamishis Sashkotsum Ramasim. The fifth year they're down to eating vermin and creepy crawly creatures. Shishis Sabineim of Nisayim, the sixth year they were eating their sons and daughters. The pasuk describes in Malachim over there that actually that during this famine over there, the pasuk describes how at one point Yehoram is walking along the wall of Shomer and a woman calls out to him for justice. What happened? She says. Yesterday we killed my son, and my neighbor and I agreed to share the meat. Today my neighbor, they're not killed him, whatever. Maybe he was dead already, and they just ate whatever. Today my neighbor's son is, and she doesn't want to share with me. So we see some people were reduced to that. Not everybody. We said before that some people even had at the end a kav of chitim or a kav of wheat or two kav of barley. But some people were reduced to this situation. And Shavuot, the seventh year, they had to eat the flesh of their own arms. Lekayim Mashenema, to move forward. It says in the pasuk, Ish sounds Roya Yechelim, every person will eat the flesh of their arm. Mefarshim on Yaakov said, I mean, come on, you know, even if a person's in the most desperate situation, they're not going to gnaw off their own arm. So there are a couple of Mefarshim on Yaakov say what it means is the hunger was so severe that, like, they were wasting away to nothing. Like the muscles of their arms, the body itself, like, you know, you don't actually go and take a bite out of your own arm, but your body itself consumes the non-essential parts, like your arms, in order to save the more essential parts, like your heart, whatever. Which also, the point of mentioning this is it was getting worse and worse, is the idea that people were supposed to be doing tshuva all that time. They didn't. So if they'd done tshuva early on, for example, it would have been a 7-year famine, but it might have been a famine of the first kind, for example. There's no tshuva growing in the field, but they still have enough stored up at home. Because they didn't do tshuva, it ended up getting worse and worse.
It's interesting, even for the Tishabav, we don't see that they had their own flesh.
Yeah, well, that's right. We mentioned there's the children, right. Yeah.
That's very interesting.
Yeah.
Another thing, Nachman asked Rabbi Yitzchok another question.
My dispute, what does it mean when it says in the pasuk, "V'kir b'chakadosh, among you is the Holy One, v'loy avay b'ir, and I won't come into the city," Meirish is saying. What's the connection between the first and the second half of the pasuk? "V'shum d'v'kir b'chakadosh loy avay b'ir, because there's holiness among you, therefore I won't come into the city." What does that mean? Okay, "V'kir b'chakadosh" sounds like it means you're doing good. You're acting like Kedoshim, therefore I'm not going to come into the city. Which, okay, Tosfos says, the simple meaning of the pasuk would be that Be'ir means with hatred. Like, Orecha means your enemy, so they're saying, because you're acting with Kedusha, therefore I won't come into the city, therefore I won't be among you as an enemy, I'll be a friend. But the Gemara is taking ear in the sense of a city, the literal sense. So what does that mean? Rabbi Yechanan said like this. It means, I will not come into the Yerushalayim Shalamayla up in Shemayim until I'm able to come into the Yerushalayim down below. In other words, until you are Kaddish, until the Kibbuch HaKaddish, as long as it's not the Kibbuch HaKaddish among you is holy. Therefore, because you're not holy yet, I'm not welcome in your shalim down here on earth. Therefore, v'loy avay b'ir. Therefore, I'm not going to come into the ear of your shalim l'mayla either.
So, what are you going to say? Ad b'kibbuch hakadosh.
It's like a question. Kibbuch hakadosh, or like a, until, but yeah.
But also, one of the other things that it would have to be is that Jerusalem would have to be
Sorry. Yeah.
Why don't I get it?
Well, the truth is, the Zohar quotes a similar expression, and it uses the expression that until the Jewish people come into Yerushalayim Shalmaila, there won't be into Yerushalayim Shalmata, they still won't be in Yerushalayim Shalmaila.
Yeah.
So there is that. Rabbi Levi Yitzchak in the Kutta Levi Yitzchak has a long discussion about, not a long one, but a shortish discussion about what the Zohar means over there. But here in the Gemara, it's taking it in the sense that the Eibishter is saying, I want to be welcome in your Shalayim Shalmata. Which, I mean, still, there is the idea, Ima Anochi, but there is the idea also, right? Some of Farshim also do equate it with the idea, Ima Anochi B'tzara. As long as the Jewish people are not able to come into Yerushalayim Shalmata, then Eibishter himself says, Kaviyachal, I'm in Golos also. I won't go into my Yerushalayim Shalmata. That's the other, And that fits more with what the Zohar is saying. Yeah.
Which Parsha is that?
Which, is in the Zohar? It's in Parshas Nasai, I think. The question is, Omiyaki Yerushalayim Amayla? Is there a Yerushalayim in heaven? The answer is yes, ain't. Just if Yerushalayim Habanuya, Ki'ir Shechubra Layachtav, Yerushalayim, which is built up, is like a city which is joined together. In other words, that Yerushalayim down here is, there's an equal to it, there's a Chubra La, there's a colleague of it up Lamayla. Well, Rashi says actually it means that Yerushalayim, built up Yerushalayim, has a sister city, so a twin city, so to speak. Where else is that twin city going to be? Where is there another city in the world, the equal of Yerushalayim? It has to be Lamayla. In Chassidus, it talks about the idea that Yerushalayim Shalmata and Yerushalayim Shalmaila represent the represent Yirat HaTorah and Yirat HaLaw. Yirat HaTorah is a necessary prerequisite for Yirat HaLaw, the kind of Yirat where you're embarrassed to do an Aveira in front of Eved Shem, and therefore that's what the Gemara is saying over here, that the Yerushalayim Shalmata, Yirat HaTorah, is a necessary prerequisite to be able to reach Yirat HaLaw, to be able to reach Yerushalayim Shalmaila. Another one, V'amaleir of Nachman Lerav Yitzchak, my dichtiv, what does it mean? It says in the Pasuk, V'achas yivaru v'yichsalu. With one thing, their yivaru, which yivaru actually can have a double meaning, it can mean they'll burn, meloshen be'era, and it can be foolish, like bar. So with one thing, yivaru v'yichsalu, and they're foolish, musar havolim etu, the musar of foolishness is wood. What does that mean? Amalei hachi amar v'yechanan, there is one particular thing that causes the Rishayim to burn in Gehenim. Mayhi Avodah Zarah. And what is that one thing? That is Avodah Zarah. How do we know the Pasuk is talking about Avodah Zarah? The Pasuk says that the Musa, the punishment for foolishness, for the foolishness of wood, meaning what kind of foolishness? So there's a pasuk that speaks of Avodah Zarah as hevel, as foolishness, maset taturim, something that taturim means like going astray. It's something that people make each other go astray with it. Taturim. Like So we see, Marshall has a longish explanation that the question basically was, part of the question is, what does the word yivaru mean? Again, does it mean burning or does it mean foolishness? And part of the question was also, why if it's one? I mean, there are many averus. If a person is going to be in Gehenim, there's many averus that can lead him there. If a person is foolish, any avera involves foolishness, in and marav avera, unless he has a ruach shrus. So why are we saying b'achas? So why does Avodah Zarah? Says, but that's what the pasuk means. The pasuk specifically referring to the pasuk specifically by saying havolim refers to Avodah Zarah. Partly in the sense because Avodah Zarah is kind of the basis of all averus. In Tanya, the Alter Rebbe explains why is Anochi the shorish for all the mitzvot aseh, and lo yilacha is the shorish for all the mitzvot lo aseh. Because a yid never wants to be separated from the Eibishter. If a person will go on Mesiris Nefesh not to be, but because he knows that Avodah Zarah will, and he knows that Avodah Zarah will separate him, so we'll go on Mesiris Nefesh not to worship Avodah Zarah. If a person realized that any Avera has the same effect, just in a smaller way, he would never do an Avera. The Ruach Shtus prevents a person from doing that. So therefore, if a person is totally committed to staying away from Avodah Zarah, then automatically that means they're totally committed to staying 100% connected with the Avishta. Good, well then they won't do any other Avera.
When you do an Avera that is even not Avodah Zarah,
it still breaks you off a little bit from Hashem. Not totally like Avodah Zarah does. Avodah Zarah would be totally cutting the rope. This is like breaking one strand, but it's still. Another thing, Rav Nachman asked Rav Yitzchak, my dichtiv, what does it mean? It says in the pasuk, "Kishtaim rois osa ami." Yirmiyo says, "There's two bad things that my people have done." What do you mean? Tarjan hu dahavu, Esrin ba'aba shvikalahu. They only did two bad things. What about the other? What about all the 24? What 24? Different Mefarshim talk about. Rashi himself brings two explanations. One is that in Yecheskel, in what the Ashkenazim read as Haftarah of Parshas Kedoshim, when Kedoshim is by itself. They read a parak from Yecheskel that has a whole catalog of avodas that the Jewish people did. There's 24 of them listed. So you're telling me they did only two. What about the rest of the 24? Or the second explanation Rashi says is they were over on everything that it says in all the 24 books of Tanakh. And then there's different other explanations also. There's other what?
Which 24 books?
The whole 24 books, So as Rabbeinu Hanano says, there's not a single Aveda mentioned in them that they didn't do. So why are you ignoring all of that? Rabbeinu Gershom gives yet a different explanation that actually in that parasha in Yechezkel there were 26 Avedas, so you're saying you're mentioning two, but you're ignoring the other 24. Anyway, whatever it is, it means they did achas shi shkula kishtayim. they did one avera, which is counted, which is equal to two. Umayni avedizara. What is that they did avedizara? Yichtiv kishtaim rois osami. As the pasuk continues, my people have done two bad things. Oisi ozu makor mayim chayim. They left me. They abandoned me, who was the Eibishter, who's a wellspring of living water, or fresh water. Lacht of lahem bodes nishbarim, to carve out for themselves pits, and not only that, broken pits. So what are the two things, actually? So Rashi says it's actually referring to the next piece, where the Gemara is going to mention two different nations that worship at Avodah Zarah, that the Jewish people are worse than both of them. There's a few different other explanations. One of them is that the pasuk itself is implying that, number one, it's a bad thing to abandon the Eibishter at all. And number two, at least if you're going to, it should be for something that's the equivalent. I'll tear off like the Goyim when there's a famous marshal from the Dubna Magid along the way there to explain this classic along the lines of that there was a guy who his father-in-law tries to set him up in business. He gives him money. The guy goes and buys some strus thing that's never going to sell. He tries again. He again buys something that's never going to go. Finally, the father says, "You know, I've got this whole warehouse of one thing. I got this whole warehouse full of another. Let me at least try to get some money for them. You know, sell them for pennies on the dollar, whatever." He gives each one to two different merchants. They go. They meet each other in the marketplace, and they end up trading their cargoes for each other. So they both come back home with the same cargoes. So the son, the lo yitzchok, says to the father, the son-in-law, the lo yitzchok, says to the father-in-law, "No, so you see those expert businessmen. They're no better than me." And the father says, "The difference is you had good cash. You could have gotten good stuff for it, and you got this stuff. Them, what did they have? What did they have to trade with anyway? All they had is this worthless junk." So the same way, the Navi is saying to the Jewish people, as the Gemara is going to say in a minute, the Goyim Mela, they don't exchange their Avodah Zarah. And even if they do, what are they doing? They're exchanging one worthless thing for another worthless thing. You have the Eibishter. How could you trade him for something else? So that's the Shayim Rois. In Chassidus, it talks about the idea that the Shtayim Rois, as the Rebbe once mentioned it in Asicha, is that you have the fact that a person should have a warmth towards Kedusha, and a person should have a coldness towards things from Klippas. If a person switches them around, he has a warmth to things of Klippa and a coldness to Kedusha. That's the Shtayim Rois. And that was the situation.
That's a good point.
So it says further in those pesukim, it says ki ivru ivrei ki I kitiyim, go pass by the islands of Kitiyim, uru, and take a look what goes on over there. The Kedar, and go to Kedar, shulchu, send messengers, these burning them oid vagam, and consider very carefully and take a look. Hahema goyalakim, has any of those nations exchanged their gods? Vahema loyalakim, and yet those things aren't even real gods. Vahami hema kvoida below yoyal, whereas my nation has exchanged their honor, meaning me, for something that's worthless. So what does the pasuk mean? Tana, kusiyim ovdim la'esh, the kitiyim, whatever, worship fire. The kederim ovdim la'mayim, the kederim worship, where the people of Kedar worship water.
Kedar is
where? Kedar is in Arabia. Saudi Arabia. So you can understand why they'd worship water. Why the kitiyim worship fire, basically. Anyway. Even though they know perfectly well that water puts out fire, nevertheless, they don't exchange their gods. The Kittim don't say, you know what, why are we bothering to worship fire? Water is stronger. Let's go over to the Kedarim. They don't. And yet, but my people, they exchange my honor for something that's worthless. So what does that mean? So that's what Rashi says. That's the shkulash kishtayim, when the pasuk says that they did one avera, which is as bad as two, means you see that even the kederim and the kittim don't give up their gods, even though they should realize with a little bit of seichel how worthless they are, and yet asnana. Also, Rav Nachman asked Rav Yitzchok another question. What does it mean when the pasuk says when Shmuel got old? When Shmuel got old, the pasuk describes the whole sequence of events there. That they appointed Shmuel as king, but everything developed from there. The question is, Shmuel became old.
Yeah.
The question is, Misib Shmuel Kulahai, was he really that old? He was only 52 years old. We learn in a Braitha in Maud Khan, Mesb Nun Beis Shana, Zerum Mitzvah of Shmuel Ramasi. If a person dies at age 52, then that's the Mitzvah of Shmuel Ramasi. The context is, the Gemara is discussing over there, what's the age of Karis, what's the age of Mitzvah B'Deshemayim. So it says over there that the Mitzvah B'Deshemayim is at 50. If a person dies at 50, it may mean that he died from Misa B'Dei Shemayim. But if a person dies at 52, obviously you're not going to say that Shmuel Navi had Misa B'Dei Shemayim. So therefore, 52 is a different kind of thing. How B'chlal we know it was 52 is a whole, Tosus brings the whole, Rashi and Tosus bring the whole calculation. The gist of it is that the gist of it is that Shmuel was 2 years old when he was weaned. And Chana promises that I'm going to bring him to the Mishkan, Yashav Sham Ad Olam, and he's going to live there forever. What does it mean forever? It means like it does by the Yovel, like by an Evidivit, 50 years. So he was 2 years old when his mother brought him there, and he lived there 52. So he lived there 52. He lived to be 52.
Another aspect of that he died in the Yovel or something like that.
No, not necessarily died in a Yovel. No, he didn't die in a Yovel. But he lived in and around the Mishkan for 50 years. I mean, he traveled all over. He traveled all over the country. But yes. Yeah. Anyway. Mind you, actually, Abavanel on the Pesukim over there argues partly based on the fact that the Pesuk says that he was Zakin, that no, he didn't live to only 52. Abavanel wants to say he lived to 70, 80, but the Gemara over here obviously is not accepting that.
The Mishnah says Zakin means what?
Ben Shishim Luzikna, so usually 60. Anyway, but yes, he's only 52. And this Vahit Kashu Zakin Shmuel is even a couple of years earlier. Amalei, Hachi Amar Rabbi Yechanan, this is what Rabbi Yechanan said, Zikna Kafta Olam, old age came on him prematurely. He was only in his late 40s, early 50s, but already he looked old. Dichtiv, why? Because later on, the Pasuk says, Nichamti Kim Lachti as Shaul. Later on, after Shaul didn't do what he was supposed to do in the war with Amalek, he didn't wipe him out, the Ebishna says to Shmuel, I regret that I made Shaul king. And Amal Afanov, so Shmuel says to the Eved Shnei Rabbanu Shalom, Shkaltani K'Moshe V'Aaron. Look, you put me, you said that I'm the equal of Moshe and Aaron in a certain sense. Dichtiv, Moshe V'Aaron B'Kohenim V'Shmuel B'Kodesh Shmaya. The Pasuk says Moshe and Aaron among his Kohenim and Shmuel among those who call out in his name. So Shmuel, in a certain way, is on the same level as Moshe and Aaron. So, Ma Moshe V'Aaron L'Bosu Ma'asi Yedei M'Chayeim. So just like Moshe and Aaron, what they accomplished during their lifetime outlasted them. It wasn't bottled during their time. What does that mean? Rashi says it's talking about Yoshua. Both Moshe and Aaron taught Yeshua, and he remained, he outlived them. He became the next leader of the Jewish people. Well, yes, but specifically Yeshua, because like they poured everything into him. Rabbeinu Gershom has a different explanation that it's talking about the Mishkan. The Mishkan outlived Moshe and Aaron. So, Afanila Yisbatal Masi Yadib Chaye, if I'm on a level of Moshe and Aaron, then what I accomplished shouldn't be Yisbatal in my life either. You want to depose Shaul as king because he didn't act properly in this affair of Amalek? So then you're making me less than Moshe and Aaron. What I accomplished that I made him king is going to be undone in my lifetime. So, Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu Hechi Evid. So now the Ebishta says, well, tak, what am I going to do? Lamus Shaul. Should Shaul die right now like a Shavuot Shmuel? Shmuel's not going to allow it. He has a valid point. Lemus Shmuel ad Zutter. Should Shmuel die while he's still young? He's only in his early 50s. Meranani Abastri. People are going to be talking about him. People are going to say he must not be such a tzaddik. Maybe Taki had Misa B'Dei Shemayim or something. Lo Lemus Shmuel, Lo Lemus Shmuel. Should neither Shaul die nor Shmuel? Shaul will keep on being king, and Shmuel will live a long time. Can't. Fargia Malchus David. The time for David's kingship has already arrived. Vein Malchus Negas B'Chaverta. If you look from Lanima, one kingship can't overlap the other one by even a hair's breadth. From Lanima means a hair's breadth. Yeah. In that case, I have no choice. Akpitzol of Zikna. So in that case, okay, I have to make him prematurely old. That way, when Shmuel passes away, people won't think that he did something wrong. Okay, he looks old. People wouldn't realize that he's only 52. People will think that he's yeah. Right. Which Mephoshim talk about? I mean, the pasuk that we quoted at the beginning by Hikash Zaka Shmuel is not talking after Shaul is actually what set the whole thing in motion for Shaul to become king. So how does that fit with our Gemara over here that the only reason why the Ebishta made Shmuel look old is now when Shaul is in trouble? So they answer that originally Shmuel was already starting to feel old. Therefore, he appointed his sons as judges. The people weren't satisfied with the sons. They weren't on the same level as he was. And therefore, that's what led them to be dissatisfied and to ask for a king, etc. And everything developed from there. But still, that wasn't totally only later on that he actually started looking old. The first, at the beginning of the whole story, he felt old after judging the people for many years. And now he actually looked old as well. Or why all of a sudden did you look old? It was because the Avishtha wants to clear the way that this way Shmuel can die without anybody thinking that he did something wrong. Then Shaul can die and Shmuel will still have his point. What he accomplished, that he appointed Shaul as king, will outlast him. And then it will be time for David's kingdom. No, the fact that he became old was this way. When he died, people will realize, nobody will ask questions, nobody will doubt the fact that he was a tzaddik. Then, with him out of the way, then Shaul can be removed, because Shaul is only lasting as long as Shmuel is there to defend him, to ask that what I accomplished shouldn't be nisbatel in my lifetime. And then there's room for David. Heiner Dechtiv, and this is in fact what it says in a pasuk, for Shaul Yosheva Giva, Shaul sitting in Giva, Tachasa Eshol, under the tree, but Rama, in Rama. Now Giva and Rama are two different places. Chimayin and Giva, it's a Rama. What is it? How could he be in Giva and in Rama? Giva was Shaul's hometown, Rama is Shmuel's hometown. So what are they, where is he? Who caused that Shaul should be able to sit peacefully and be king in Giba for 2.5 years, because that's how long Shaul's kingship was, the tefillah of Shaul from Rama. And therefore, it's a tachas ha'eshel. An eshel means a big tree, like v'yitza eshel b'ver shava. A great Talmud Chacham is often compared to a tree. He was a Navi as well, but we'll have that later. We had that. Yeah, that's true. We also had him suffering in Bekashta Lechoniki Tola Be'ilin Gadol. Yeah. So the pasuk is saying that Shaul is sitting in Giba, sitting peacefully in Giba. Why? Because Tachas Eshel, because he's under the protection of the Eshel, meaning Shmuel, the Rama who lives in Rama. And in fact, what ended up happening is after Shmuel passed away, Shaul only outlived him by 4 months. Yeah. Shmuel passed away in Ir. It's actually in Shulchan Aruch. At the end of Megillah Tainus, there's a list of days when Yechidus Gula used to fast. Maybe even some people do now. I don't know. It's also brought in Shulchan Aruch, in Aruch Chaim. And one of them is a date in Ir, Chofav of Ir, I think, when Shaul passed away. Chofchet Ir, actually. I think they still celebrate it in Eretz Yisrael Ad Hayom Hazeh. They go to Shmuel's Kever in the north of Yerushalayim, and then Shaul was killed in battle a few months later, Elul Tishrei time.
Shaul found David a few years before, right?
Right. So there are Mefarshim who want to say, I think Ababonel in particular says this, that when Pasuk says that Shaul ruled for 2 years, it doesn't literally mean he was only from when he was crowned until he was killed in battle was only 2 years or 2.5 years, like the Gemara says here. Rather, it means he had 2 years of undisturbed kingship, and then began his Ruach Ra, the evil spirit that came on him, that he started harassing David, etc. But altogether, Ababonel wants to say that Shaul was king for a considerable amount of time. But from the Gemara here, it comes out that not, that literally all of those events, from when Shaul started out with such high hopes, and then afterwards the story with Amalek, and then everything started going downhill from there, and then him chasing after David, and so forth, all of that happened within a 2 or 2.5 year period.
For this discussion, what makes one section outfast?
So that's what we're saying. Moshe and Aaron had that schluss, and Shaul asked Shmuel, asked for that as well. And then
because
they were great tzaddikim, the pastors.
They asked for it.
Yeah. I don't know if Moshe and Aaron asked for it specifically, but yeah.
And Shmuel
asked for it, yeah.
What did he ask for?
Because he felt that's important, that I shouldn't have the tsar of having to see that my protege, that Shaul, you know, he failed, okay, but I shouldn't have the tsar of having to see that he dies, that he's deposed from the kingship during my lifetime.
Yeah. But in a way, David wouldn't have come without Shaul.
The Eibishter has different ways of arranging things, but yeah, now the Eibishter is saying it's time for David to start actually becoming king, so therefore we need to remove Shaul. That's the question we're asking. Mi mitcha gavra, mikame gavra? Does one person get pushed aside because of another? You're telling me that, what are you telling me in effect? Shmuel had to die in order that David is going to be able to become king. Is that fair? That tzaddik Shmuel Anavi should have to be pushed aside. He should have to die young at 52 for the sake because of it. The answer is ain. Yes. The Amar of Shmuel ben Achmeni, Amar Rabbi Yechanan, Rabbi Yonasan, my dichtiv. What does it mean? It says in the pasuk, Al kein chotzavti b'nevim. Therefore, I've hewn out, I've carved out among the nevim, haragtim b'imepi. I killed them by the word of my mouth. Well, not sampling them. Right? Say that they died for their mice sin, which would imply they did something wrong. Elohim made peace, but because of my words. I made a Xera, for example, in this case. The Edrishter was Gozer. There's a certain time that David's going to start becoming king. So therefore, yes, if that means removing Shmuel from the scene, so that then Shaul loses his protection and ends up getting killed in battle, yes, that's how it's going to have to be. Alma, Mitzche Gavra, Mikame Gavra. So therefore, yes, you can see that one person is pushed aside in favor of another. Rav Nachman and Rav Yitzchok Abba Yasser B'Sudasa. Now, Rav Nachman and Yitzchok one time were sitting at a meal. Omle Rav Nachman and Rav Yitzchok, Leima Mar Milsa. So Rav Nachman asked Rav Yitzchok, would you say a vart of Torah? Omle Rav Yitzchok tells him, no. Hachi Amar Rav Yechanan, Ein Mesichin B'Suda. You're not allowed to talk during a meal. Shema Yaktim Kana Levesh, because the windpipe might come ahead of the food pipe, in other words, your food will go down the wrong way, V'Yavale De Sakana, and you'll be endangered. Bosser desod, so after they finish the meal, Amalei, so Rabbi Yitzchok tells him, okay, now I'll tell you a word. Hachi Amar Rabbi Yechanan, famous thing, Yaakov Avinu Loi Meis. This is what Rabbi Yechanan said, Yaakov, our father, did not die. Before, there is somebody who says, Alter Chatzachos, that this and also the next thing that he says that about Rachav was the one reason why, there are many reasons we'll talk about, Alpi Nigla and Alpi Sidus, why he picked this thing out to say, but somebody says, a Gleis Vertel, that the reason is, Rabbi Yitzchok wanted to illustrate to Rabbi Nachman, you know why Ein Mesichin Besuda? You know why you're not supposed to talk during the meal? Because even if you, Rabbi Nachman, let's say you, Rabbi Nachman, are in the middle of eating, fine, let's say I've finished eating already, I still don't want to say something, because what if I say something surprising like that, like Yaakov Avinu Levi, and you're going to, either you're going to gasp in surprise, or you're going to answer like you just did, like Rav Nachman is going to answer, and then you'll be talking while you're eating, and you're going to, Amalei, so Rav Nachman asked him, what do you mean? Was it for nothing that the eulogizer was eulogized? Yaakov, and the ones who embalmed him, and the ones who buried him. Was that all for nothing? Amalei, so Rav Yitzchok tells him, Mikrani Dirish. Well, wait. So Rav Yitzchok tells him, Mikrani Dirish. I'm darshaning a pasuk. Shenemar, the pasuk says, Va'ata altira abdi Yaakov no'um Hashem. You, my servant Yaakov, don't fear, says Hashem. Va'altechat Yisrael. Don't be nervous, Yisrael. Ki hinini Mashiach ha'meirachek, because I will save you from afar. Ve'ezdaracha me'eretz shivyam, and I'll save your seed, your descendants, from the land of their captivity. Therefore, Makish Hu Lazare. It's making a hekesh between him, Yaakov, and his descendants. Ma Zare Bachayim, Ahu Bachayim. Just like his children are alive, so is he alive. It's a very famous story. Now, what on earth does all this mean? Why is Rabbi Yitzchok picking this of all things to say? When Rabbi Nachman answers him, what do they embalm him and bury him and whatever for nothing? What do you mean for nothing? The question should be, how do you embalm and bury somebody who's alive? And what is he answering by Mikrani Dirish? There's a lot of different explanations and details about this. One is that taking first what Rashi says when he says loymeis elachai uloylam, he's alive forever. So what is it for nothing that they did all these things? Is mitrani dorish? I'm darshaning the pasuk. Yes, they embalmed him and buried him and so forth because they thought he was dead. Spurim hoyu shemeis, but really he was alive. Rashi says spurim hoyu shemeis. And Tosfos points out, in fact, the pasuk does not actually use the word vayomos by Yaakov, the pasuk vayigva by Yosef alamov. It never actually says the word mace. He himself says he knows he mace because the pashas he didn't know that he's going to be on this level. But in the end, Yaakov avinu loy mace. Some of our point to actually Tosfos points out over here actually that we find when they took Yaakov to bury him in Maros Machpelah, you have the whole story over there where Esav came to block the burial, and Chushim ben Don goes and knocks in and when whacks off Esav's head, and Yaakov opens his eyes and laughs. So he really was alive in that sense then.
So why do we just say that about Yaakov?
So many Mepharshim point out, the Ritva, I think, points out, Marsha, others, not the Ritva, the Rashba, the Marsha, others. The difference is that we don't say it about Avraham and Yitzchak because Avraham and Yitzchak are not, in that sense, fully alive. They had descendants who were Rishoyim. They had Esav and they had Yishmael and Esav, respectively. Yaakov is mitoth shleima. Only of him can you say ma'zare b'chayim, that just like all of his children are alive, ahu b'chayim.
Even with Shimon and Levi and Reuben.
Yeah, because even Shimon and Levi and Reuben, I mean, they did things they weren't supposed to do, but they're still kol ha'ilah shivti yisrael shneim also. They're still all an integral part of the Jewish people. Yeah, but Yishmael is not an Esav, is not. Yeah. So therefore, in that sense, there's something of Avraham and Yitzchak that's missing. Not all of them succeeded to future generations. Yeah. The Rebbe talked to... Marshall brings it, for example, yeah. The Rebbe talked a number of famous sikhs about this topic at different times. Among the points that Eva made are so what's the whole sequence of events over here? Basically like this then in one sicha, which the Eva said in Tavshin Lamed Aleph and is printed in Chelik Lamed Hey, look what the sicha is. It started with like this. Reb Nachman is asking Reb Yitzchak, tell me a Dvar Torah. I know it's during the meal. I know you're not supposed to speak during the meal because it's dangerous. But the Pashtus, that doesn't apply to Divrei Torah. Divrei Torah protects a person. Reb Yitzchak tells him no. Nevertheless, you have this issue, Shema Yaktim Karnal Abesh, meaning yes, Torah protects a person, but not when there's a clear and present danger, not when it's Kriya Hazeka or Shriya Hazeka, which it is if you talk during the meal. Now, the Rebbe goes on to say, you could understand that then in two different possible ways. You could say then that, look, you know, I mean, the Torah is given in a physical world. Okay, you know, you have to consider what the physical world, you know, the limitations of the physical world, and you know, and modify what you're doing according to that. Or is it the Torah itself is telling you that the Torah is not coming to undo the physical world, the Torah is coming to be mevarer, to work within the physical world to be mevarer. So then you're not saying the Torah, according to the second approach, you're not saying the Torah is, you know, there's things of Torah you can't do because physical limitations prevent us. So the less weird, we won't do that. No, you're saying the Torah itself puts those limitations on you. The Torah itself wants you to act knowing you're in a physical world. So therefore, so he tells him that's how it comes in. Yaakov Avinu Lo Meis. That yes, Yaakov, there's a physical Yaakov who seemingly was dead, and in fact they embalmed him, they buried him, they mourned for him, and like Rashi says, Svurim Hayu Shemet, they thought he was died, they thought he was dead, and from their perspective, they're absolutely right. If you started taking Yaakov's vital signs at that point, you wouldn't find a pulse, you wouldn't find a heartbeat, etc. But nevertheless, there's another level of Gashmius on which Yaakov is still alive.
This is a previous discussion about Yerushalayim Shechuvala. That was Yerushalayim Shlemala and Yerushalayim Shlemata. That even when Yerushalayim Shlemata is destroyed, Yerushalayim Shlemala is never destroyed.
Could be, but I mean, it's more than that, because we're saying it's not just that Yaakov's neshama survived him. Obviously, everybody's neshama survived them. The chiddush is that even his guf lived on two different levels. His guf lives on a certain level, the way people of his time visualized it, he was dead. But on a higher or deeper level, he's still alive.
He's with his son.
Because he started laughing, right. Yeah. So this teaches us that it's not that a yid is subject to the limitations of the physical world because you live in a physical world, you've got to be subject to its limitations. The Torah itself subjects you to its limitations of the physical world. So fine, the Torah says that the sons of Yaakov are responsible. They have to embalm him and bury him and mourn for him, etc., like you do for any other person who passed away. But Yaakov himself is not subject to that. The Baal Shem Tov actually said on himself that I could have gone up to Shemayim alive, like Eliyahu HaNavi did, but he said I wanted the bitter of Ki Ofer Atav El Ofer Toshu, the perfection that comes from the body returning to dust. But he actually wanted that.
Also, he probably wanted to make sure that people can pray out his way.
Who, Yaakov?
No,
the Baal Shem Tov? Could be. There is also, we do also find something similar about Rabbeinu HaKadosh. The Gemara tells in Ksubas the story of how we talked about it a couple months ago, I think, how after Rabbeinu HaKadosh passed away, he used to come every Friday night back home to make Kiddush for his family. He was able to be mighty them, obviously, because in that sense, he's still alive. So but everyone talked about that also. Rabbi Yehudan Nasi is Rosh HaTevis Nitzutze Shel Yaakov Avinu, a spark of Yaakov. So yeah, therefore he had that certain thing of Yaakov.
Was there he stayed in the attic?
No, that was Rabbi Lozer, Rabbi Shimon.
Oh,
It was in the attic. Yeah. But yeah, that's true. Also, Mephoshim do mention that, and that in this connection also. That there you have another example of somebody who passed away and is still alive in a certain sense after he passed away, and he's judging cases and all. Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's
still alive now.
Hello,
judge cases after.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a story.
Yeah. It's in the Gemara in Ben Bar Matia. Yeah. And in Asachat Yeah. Anyway. So yeah. Aside from that, then the Rebbe goes on to there was a different time the Rebbe also talked about this at the time of the Gulf War, at the time of the first Gulf War when everybody was everybody all over the world except for the Rebbe was nervous about what's going to be with the Jews of Eretz Yisrael, and there was a certain well known Rosh Hashiva of that time who was saying that the Jewish people of our time deserve punishment for the way they're acting or not acting. The Rebbe screamed about that in a very famous sicha. And one thing the Rebbe pointed out is, what do we see from this Gemara when we say Ma Zare B'chaim Achu B'chaim? We're saying, when it comes to Yaakov, it seemed to them that he was dead, but still he's alive. Same thing it is, he says with Zarei. You can have Jews who it seems are spiritually dead, but they're not. They're just as much alive, they're just as much an integral part of the Jewish people as anybody else. And don't talk that way about them. Yeah.
Like in Israel, there's just amazing that it's only 5% that is the intermarriage rate in Israel.
What? 5% the intermarriage rate in Eretz Yisrael is it's 5% too high, but yeah, it's a lot lower than it is in most parts of the world. Yeah.
And they're also doing a lot more mitzvahs, because they're doing mitzvah kalas.
But we're not just talking about Jews in Eretz Yisrael. We're talking about Jews all over the world.
Yeah, I know. Especially.
One thing is also as far as why the Gemara specifically says this about Yaakov. One of the Mefarshim, I think it's also Mashallah, says the reason why we're singling out Yaakov is because he's the only one of us who was buried outside Eretz Yisrael. Avraham and Yitzchak, maybe it's not such a chiddush, but Yaakov was buried outside of Eretz Yisrael. The chiddush is that you want Moshiach HaMeirach, the Ebeshe says, I will save you from a faraway land. And just like Yaakov is originally died in Mitzrayim and is able to come to Eretz Yisrael alive, so also, maybe, I don't know, but whatever it is. I mean, he was in Mitzrayim for a time, while they embalmed him or whatever, yeah. Reb Levick, the Rebbe's father, has a very, very long and detailed explanation of the Kabbalah of this entire story. Oh, I forgot to mention one thing that Eva also points out in the Sikha, that we've been having this whole discussion. Throughout this whole discussion, Rabbi Yitzchak has been quoting various statements from Rabbi Yochanan. One of them was the one about Yerushalayim, Shamayla, and Shamata, etc., but there was the one about the nets from Yoel's times, where the grain grew in 11 days, etc. The point is, we're quoting all these things in the name of Rabbi Yochanan to illustrate this idea of how the Jewish people are beyond nature. Just like when the Eibishter wants it, grain can grow for us in 11 days when normally it grows in 6 months. Yet, Yaakov is similarly above nature, that he's alive even after he's seemingly dead. I was going to say that Reb Levick has a very, very long and detailed explanation of the Kabbalah of literally every word in this entire piece of Gemara. But a lot of it is way beyond me, but a couple of tidbits from it at least. One is, he points out, that this Suda that we had over here wasn't just any Suda. He says it was Shal Shudas. And he explains in detail of how at that Suda we have is the time when the Metzach, when the forehead of the Sfirus, so to speak, of parts of the Sfirus, is most open. That's we say in Vnei Chala, the Mitzchah de Yahin Chalpin. He associates, Reb Nachman has an association with the Metzach. He's going to explain the next thing about Rochav, that she also has a certain association with it, etc., and therefore he explains that's how this whole conversation came to be. He says also, Reb Nachman had asked Reb Yitzchak to say a milsa, mem lamed sof aleph. And what does Reb Yitzchak tell him? Loi meis, the same letters. Also, Reb Levick says over there, why specifically more by Yaakov more than anybody else? Are we saying that Yaakov in Olay Meis? Yaakov's midday is MS. So first of all, it explains in many places in Chassidus, MS never ends. So therefore, Yaakov can never end either. but also Emes LeYaakov, he says in Osius, Yaakov Loi Meis. Emes LeYaakov is Osius, Yaakov Loi Meis. That's related sentence, yeah. Next thing, Amar of Yitzchak, Kola Omer Rochav Miyad Nikri. Anybody who says Rochav immediately gets Keri. I mean, immediately has an emission from the thought. Rochav from last week's parasha, the Ishazino who took in the two Meraglim and hit him. Amar of Nachman, I know I'm in a Vilayach Basli, so Rav Nachman says, what are you talking about? I say Rochav and nothing happens. No, but originally she was a Zoyna, and she was one of those beautiful women in the world. The Gemara in Megillah mentions that she's one of the four most beautiful women in history.
Well, the one that hid the wall?
Yeah, the one that hid the two Meraglim,
right,
Yeshua. Yeah, from last week's Hatzorah, yeah. So anybody who says her name, Rochav Miyad Nichri.
Just from the name.
Yeah. Amalei Rav Nachman, Rav Nachman says, I say it, it doesn't matter to me. Right, what I'm talking about is somebody who knows her and recognizes her and then says her name.
Yeah.
Or Tosfos has a different explanation, Yoda Shabal on the Lashon Va'adam Yoda. So somebody who actually was with her and then afterwards mentions her name, yeah, then you know, just the mention of it is enough to trigger that. But somebody else, you 1,000 years later, attacking up. What's the connection of this to the previous Gemara? So again, according to Reb Levick, there's that whole connection with the forehead, Meitzach Ishazayna, and he goes into a whole explanation about what Rachav was before she was Nisgayer, the lowest levels of Tumah, and what she became after she was Nisgayer, as we'll learn in Megillah in a few weeks. 8 Nevi'im were descended from her after she became a Geirus and married Yeshua, yeah. The Rebbe in the Sicha that I was referring to before, this part is not in Likud the Sichas, this part is in not Mugadika part, but the Rebbe talked about, there's a couple of things. First of all, it continues on this theme of Shchia Chazeka, that when you have a Hezek, which is an obvious, which is a clear and present danger, you have to be careful about it. A regular person who says, Rachav, nothing's going to happen to him. But somebody who knows her, yes, it's a clear and present danger to even say her name. And therefore you have to be careful about it. And the Rebbe also goes into a discussion over there about how the whole thing with Yaakov Avinu Loi Meis is associated also with the idea of being careful in Dibur and being careful not to waste even a little bit of Chayos. Yaakov himself is Kochi Bereshis Oni. He never even had he never had Keri. His first Zera ever was what he conceived Reuven with, as opposed to Ha'imar Rachav. Rachav is the opposite of that, and therefore that's the connection why the Gemara brings it over here also. When they were taking leave of each other, Amalei, Rav Nachman says, Rav Yitzchak, Livorchen Mar. Rebbe, give me a bracha. Amalei, so Rav Yitzchak tells him, Em Shalacha Mashal, Lamar Devadayim. I'll give you a mashal. What's it like? La'adam Shaya Holach Bamidbar, like a person who was traveling in the desert, Vaya Roy V'Oyev Kitsame. He was hungry and thirsty, and he was hungry and tired and thirsty. He finds a tree that has sweet fruit, and nice shade, and a stream of water flowing underneath it. So he eats from the fruit, drinks from the water, and sits in the shade. And when he wanted to go, Omar, Ilan, Ilan, Bama Barachacha, tree, oh tree, how should I give you a bracha? I should give you a bracha that your fruit is sweet. Your fruit's already sweet. That your shade should be pleasant. Harit Silach, no, your shade is already pleasant. You should have a stream of water flowing underneath you. You already have that also. You have everything. You have all the good things.
It should always be that way.
Yeah. That all the plantings that are planted from you should be just like you. They should have the same advantages as you do. After the same thing, Rabbi Yitzchak says to Rabbi Nachman, how am I supposed to give you a bracha? In Torah, Arei Torah. I'm supposed to give you a bracha for Torah. You already have Torah. In Ba'osha, Arei Osha. Riches, you already have riches. We find different places in Gemara. Rabbi Nachman was very rich. In Ba'bonim, Arei Bonim. Children, you already have children. Elo, Yehiratzen, Shiyotzetzai, Me'echa, Kamoska. So Yehiratzen, that the descendants, that your descendants should be just like you. And this is also, I haven't seen anything, but I don't think I saw anything about this, but Pasha, this also continues with the Mazar Ebachayim Afu Bachayim thing. If Reb Nachman has descendants who are just like him, then he continues to be that tree that has these great advantages, yeah.
Rebbe
Maharash was 48.
48, that's a moment.
No, shorter, actually. Actually,
48, and he was
48. Actually,
I think
the
58.
The Rebbe once told a story that the Rebbe Manash was sick throughout most of his life. But one time, the Tzemach Tzedek didn't know about it. One time, when they told the Tzemach Tzedek, he said, "It's a pity I didn't know until now. I could have at least accomplished Lamaila that he should live as long as Shmuel."
What did he say?
I don't know. I do know that they said.
The
Rebbe Manash is Yotzei Tzvi Gimel Tishrei. He was born Beis Yir. That's what he means. What the Rebbe Manash had, I don't know. I do know I've heard for a long time that there's supposed to be a picture of the Rebbe Manash out there. A few years ago, in Algemeiner Journal, they published something that was supposed to be his picture. But supposedly Zalman Gerari, Yalav Shalom, had an actual picture of the Rebbe Manash, but never published it because it showed him very bloated. Very, from sickness, and he felt it wouldn't be. I guess the Rebbe told him that it wouldn't be respectful to publish it. So yeah, I what it was exactly, I don't know, but yeah.
I heard about that. Yeah. So this lady who saved her, what was her name again?
Rachel. Right.
So she and the pack. I never concentrate on the whatever. Well,
possibly. Right.
They tap the red rope. They say marrying Yeshua.
Right. So I mean, the pasuk over there, the Haftarah of Shlach doesn't mention any of that. It just mentions that they went back and told Yeshua the mission was a success.
Right.
But later on, it says that yes, when they conquered Yericho, they spared Rachav's house and everybody in it. And later on, it says that Rachav, it doesn't actually say in so many words that she was Nisgayer, and the Gemara certainly doesn't explicitly mention that, the Pasuk doesn't explicitly mention that she married Yeshua, but the Gemara, we'll learn in Megillah, the Gemara learns it.
Was
what?
Yeshua was only married to her?
Yeah. I don't know, maybe, I don't know.
And what came out of how many descendants?
They had 8 Nevi'im were descended from them.
Nevi'im.
8 Nevi'im. Among them are Yirmiyahu and his father who was a Navi, Yechezkel and his father, Hulda, and I forgot who the other ones were.
We see this theme often in Torah, someone who is on the wrong path just because he does tshuva.
Yeah. So that's Reb Levick has a very, very long explanation in this whole thing in Likut Levi Yitzchak. He has a very, very long, Turtle Levi Yitzchak rather, whatever. He has a very, very long explanation of what Rachav was during the years that she was an Oved Avodah Zarah and a Zoyna and so forth on the 50th level of Truma, and how once she did Shuva and she married Yeshua, how that brought her up to the highest height, because she already represented something very high in Klippa, and something very high in Klippa can become something very high in Kedusha. Yeah.
One of the Rabbim had the power of the spirit, right?
One of them, Pinchas, yeah. Actually, there's a medrash that says that.
Had they come to that house, they're just hiding in the wall. She told them. How
they by a boy based issue. The pasuk just says by a boy based issue. Zayin of the pasuk say, you want to go someplace like that in order to gather information about the city because everybody comes and goes there.
Yeah,
the Gemara, in fact, in Zvachim says that all the leading citizens of that part of the world used to hang out there. Yeah. But one more thing, and then we should go out there from Irish. But there's a medrash that points out that actually she reached a very high level of understanding of Elikos just on that one night. That when she says to the Meraglim that I know that now I know that Eivishter Hu Ha'Elikim B'Shemayim Mimav Alaris Mitachas. Or I don't remember the exact words, but it's similar to that. We're learning in Tanya these days what that means, what it really means to know Ki Avaya Hu Ha'Elikim, and she reached that.
Wow! How did she become? How did she realize
that? Apparently she realized on her own.
When they came,
and that awakened in her, what the potential that she had, yeah. Yeah.